Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Mr. Beacon podcast presents Building the Web of Things, Everything, with guest Dominique Guinard, CTO of Everything. Sponsored by Wiliot, scaling IoT with battery-free Bluetooth.
So Dominique Guinard, CTO of Everything, thank you so much for spending time with us on the Mr. Beacon podcast. We're going to talk about two things. I don't know if we're going to have time for both in one episode, but the first thing that I want to talk about is your book, Building the Web of Things. And I bought a copy and I've been working through it, and I love it. I think it's fantastic. I think you've done an amazing job. It's super practical. And what I like is for those of us who talk about the Internet of Things and cloud services, you make it really specific and real, and you allow us to actually, with a remarkably small amount of work, achieve a huge amount with very simple exercises. And then before you know it, you're like really deep into stuff. And it's very helpful for me because I see my job, part of my job, is helping to build solutions. And I may be a marketing guy, but I'm trying to figure out what are the pieces and how do they work together. And this really is a core to it. And I think you've done an amazing job. So
thank you.
Let's talk about it. So first of all, tell us what's the difference between the Web of Things and the Internet of Things?
Well, I think the difference is in, you know, exactly what you said before. So you said with a small amount of work, you actually managed to build an end-to-end application, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the work in the Internet of Things in the early years of the IoT was really on networking protocols, right? Developing new networking protocols, sometimes competing protocols to bring things to the internet. Very little work was done in terms of understanding how these things that were on the internet would actually integrate into the application ecosystem. And the Web of Things is really about that. It's really about trying to think about the application layer that we would build on top of the Internet of Things. And it, you know, just like the web made the internet successful, it's trying to show you how the web can make the Internet of Things successful. It requires some tweaking, some protocols need to be adapted. But overall, you can fairly quickly create big solutions by using scalable web technologies on top of things.
And tell us, for those who haven't seen the book before, what are the web technologies that you explain? What are the building blocks?
So for those who are fairly technical, these are straightforward technologies like HTTP and WebSocket. So technologies are already widespread web technologies. So yeah, HTTP, WebSocket, then using JSON for actually representing the data, mm-hmm. Using the web security mechanisms such as TLS, but then also it goes beyond the basic building blocks of the web to extend into, for instance, the semantic web, using semantic web technologies to not only connect things to the web, but also make them findable and usable on the web. Or it also looks into using the social web to build a social web of things, because mm-hmm. there are nice ways of sharing things using social web technologies. So it looks at basically what can you put in the IoT toolbox from the web that can be useful to connect things?
And I think the great thing is you start off with REST APIs, which is basically a URL, and you type things in, and the way you've got it set up, we can actually get results very quickly. And what I've seen is you've got kind of two paths. One is the Raspberry Pi piece. So basically, I bought my own here, and
nice.
It's the size of a box the size of a can of Altoids, and I think it cost me like $25. And I've got a computer here that has a USB connection, an HDMI connection, probably has Bluetooth in. I haven't got that far.
Bluetooth and Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I think so.
Just absolutely amazing, but a little daunting because it doesn't come in a nice box and so forth. And what I love is that you've got this setup already available because it's the web and it's actually somewhere around here. Where is it? The system that we can access.
Yeah, it's at the back of the room actually, and I cannot take credits for that. This was the somehow the publisher Manning was, they read the draft and they were like, your book is great, but to actually get the power of the story you're telling, you almost need to get to the end. So they were asking us, is there a way to show from chapter one onwards or chapter two, the full extent of what you can do with the web and things, right? And that's when we started thinking, well, we can put that device on the web and let people try from the word go, actually.
What I found myself doing was typing in a few URLs, and I'm suddenly browsing a computer and seeing what the sensors are and being able to display my name on a computer in your office, thousands of miles away. So it's fantastic. What I can't believe is that you're CTO of a company like Everything and you wrote that book at the same time. How did you do that?
Yeah, I mean, the original idea for writing that book came out of our PhD thesis. So both Vlad and I wrote probably the two first PhD theses on the Web of Things. And, mm-hmm. and then we were contacted by Manning and we thought, hey, we can just reuse our PhD thesis and convert it into a book, right? We were young and naive, and it didn't really work that way, right? But the initial plan was to spend a couple of weeks during the summer holidays on converting that, right? It absolutely did not work like that. We ended up having to work on it for 18 months. It was basically every weekend for 18 months we were working on that.
So you have very tolerant wives, girlfriends, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. She was really tolerant. She actually pushed me and...
To get it done.
Thankful for that, yeah.
So years and years ago, I wrote a book on Unix device drivers with someone that I worked with. And at the beginning of the book, we got on great. By the end of it, we weren't speaking. So Vlad and you, do you still speak with each other?
We're still very, very good friends. So,
excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's very impressive that you've managed to do that. Okay, so we've talked about some of the technologies. What has this book got to do with your day job, with Everything?
Well, so the way we started Everything, the company was very much as an extension of the research we were doing on bringing web technologies to embedded devices, but also to all kinds of connected things, right? So if you want, the core of the technology we're presenting in the book is the core of the technology that the Everything platform is built on.
Mm-hmm.
And at Everything, we help customers connecting their products to the web, right? So that's the core of what we're doing. So somehow, this is a short, condensed version of what we're doing at Everything.
So what is in the core of the Everything platform then? You're helping... brands, consumer packaged goods companies establish a digital link with a physical product, whether it's a Coke bottle or a shirt. Or what are some of the things that you've done that with? Give me a few examples.
Yeah, so that's exactly what you're describing. Yeah, we're basically giving a URL to every single object and providing an API for these objects, so they get a digital twin, so to say. In terms of examples, probably one of the most well-known brands is Coca-Cola. So with them, we worked on actually enabling billions of identities on Coke cans and Coke products. And this allows them to run marketing campaigns, to run loyalty programs, but also to learn more about the flow of their products and understand how they're being used. It's the first time they can really create a link between people and products without having to go through intermediaries.
Which is a huge deal. It's massively disruptive because traditionally, maker of consumer product hands it off to sometimes a multi-tiered distribution chain, and they have no idea who's at the other end of it. Maybe they run a contest with a card to get you to register, and we all know that no one registers the products that they buy.
I think what's fascinating is that when you tell people that story, they go like, but in what terms is this the Internet of Things, right? And actually, if you look at the definition of the Internet of Things, came out in 1999 from a set of laboratories called the AutoID Labs at MIT and ETH Zurich, and a researcher called Kevin Ashton, I think he was one of the co-directors of the lab, needed to present to Procter & Gamble the digitalization strategy for their products. And started thinking, well, you could put an RFID tag on every Procter & Gamble product and you could connect them together to form an Internet of Things. So the Internet of Things itself was born with the notion of CPG products being connected together, right? So today, you know, the rest is history, and today we really see the Internet of Things as smart homes, smart cities, but I think there's much more to it, right? There are you know, millions of consumer electronic products out there, but there are actually trillions of CPG and apparel products or lower cost products that actually can benefit from being interconnected as well.
How many products do you have in your database?
So unique products, we connect about 1 billion unique products right now. If you consider products that are not uniquely identified, but identified at the product category level, that's several billions of products. So we register several billions of transactions on products.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But there's a difference whether it's uniquely identified or not.
Can you explain that a little bit more? So I can imagine there's this kind of trend in packaged, consumer packaged goods, especially pharmaceuticals, to serialize, because everyone wants to be able to identify what was the product that you have for warranty reasons, and to track whether it's authentic, and maybe if there's a recall, they want to know that. But when would you not have that unique identity?
That's a good question. Actually, if you have the unique identity, you're in a much better place. And I think the number of applications that can be based just on the fact that you have a unique identifier for products are almost unlimited, right? The reason you don't get unique identifiers yet is simply the cost. Although it may seem trivial to print, for instance, a unique QR code on a product, at massive speeds, such as, you know, the speed brands like Coca-Cola or Nestle need to print their packaging at, this has a big cost. Just slowing down the printing process to print unique identities has a massive cost, which is something I discovered, actually. I didn't imagine that.
I was talking to someone at one of the CPG companies, and they described a rookie mistake they made where they, I think they dropped something in the production process, and the products were being produced at like a freight train just coming off the production line, and basically the whole thing exploded, and it was catastrophic for a short period of time. Actually, stopping the press is challenging, and that becomes, you talked about, it's difficult with the QR code, and I mean, what happens with radio technologies? How do you get a unique ID and an RFID tag if you're producing?
Yeah, this is why this type of technologies are still limited to higher end products, right? So, for instance, we use NFC and RFID in apparel. We have a big contract with a labeling company called Avery Dennison. They produce a lot of labels for apparel brands. And through that contract, we basically enable apparel brands to put digital identities on the product, unique digital identities. And that's when you start to see RFID tags or NFC tags, or even higher end technologies such as Bluetooth, low energy, and so on. I think this is currently the limit. But I also see it shifting, right? I think even 5 years ago, it was a no-go to put an NFC tag in an apparel item simply because of the cost. This is already changing. So I think we'll see a little revolution in smart packaging in the next few years, actually.
So, you know, one of the things that's happened is the cost of RFID tags has gone down. And I think if you're buying a billion, you can get them for just a few cents, 5 cents or less even.
Less, yeah.
But is that still money on the cost of something where they're very sensitive to increasing the cost? What are your thoughts on the those organizations coming to terms with the return on investment? Because if it's coming out of the packaging guy's budget, then he's not going to like it. But the benefits are all to the marketing organization and so forth. Are companies getting it together in terms of funding it, or is it still a zero-sum game where you're fighting for pennies out of the packaging?
Yeah, it requires a little bit of mind shift, right? Because if you digitally enable your products just for a particular marketing campaign, then that's not really product digitalization, right? You need to think of that in broader terms. You need to imagine that every single product now has an identity, and that you can develop a number of applications and a number of returns on investment on top of that technology. You really need to see it as a platform rather than a one-off kind of campaign for a product. And that's tricky because it means the packaging people have to be on board to basically put the digital trigger or even the piece of electronic on the product. But they don't do that only for them. They do that for other parts of the organization, such as the marketing or supply chain or product authenticity, which can be very different parts of an organization. So it's really this platform thinking that I think brands need to start to have. And for us, when brands start to get that it's not only a way to run a one-off campaign, but rather a platform play to digitalize their products, when this happens, then that's when the magic happens, right? Because then they can see the return across multiple applications.
To me, it's just a matter of time before all high-end CPG companies latch onto this. The benefit of knowing who your customer is and being able to satisfy problems like grey markets and authenticating that the product is a real product and potentially automatic replenishment of products as they get worn out and consumed is just kind of a no-brainer. And it's really just up to McKinsey to start a practice and kind of get at the CEO level and the board level, which is really what it requires, in my opinion. The thing that I haven't really figured out is what's in it for the consumer. So can you give some examples of what you've seen that works? Why would a consumer want a dress or a handbag with an RFID or, hopefully from our perspective, from Williot's perspective, a Bluetooth tag in it? There's certainly lots of things they can be afraid of, like privacy and so forth. What's on the other side of the ledger that would actually make them want to have a digitally connected piece of apparel?
Yeah, and that is such an important question. I remember when I was at the Auto ID Labs, which were, these were the early years of EPC RFID, so putting unique product code on RFID tags. And I remember one episode where a deployment at Walmart of EPC tags led to people chaining themselves at the store doors to not let the goods with RFID tags getting in, right? And this really, you know, struck me, and I was like, why do they see such a big problem? And I think the reason is they saw no benefit for them in that, right? And we naturally, this is the case with mobile phone or with any technology that eats a little bit of our privacy, we put things on a balance, right? What do I get and what do I have to give, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't quite get the balance correctly, but we always look at cost and benefit at the end of the day. So it's very important that CPG brands and apparel brands and anyone who is putting this digital technology on their products really thinks about, you know, there must be a big win for the consumer. In terms of big wins for the consumers, well, concrete examples, obviously marketing, promotion, loyalty is what comes to mind at first, but there are slightly more subtle use cases. You talked about product authenticity, which is a big deal in apparel, for instance, but also even in CPG, drinks, you know, high-end drinks and so on.
Certainly pharmaceuticals. You want to know that the medicine's the real thing, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. In pharmaceuticals, there's also a legal framework facilitating that, right? Because there are now legal requirements to be able to trace the goods. But that's one aspect. And then you can think of, you know, beyond just an identity, an identifier, if you start thinking about sensing capabilities, right? The kind of things Wiliot is also looking at, then there is an added benefit, right? You can know, for instance, the temperature of a product across the supply chain. And this, for some products, is tremendously important, such as for medicine and drugs or also edible products. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just at the beginning of understanding the benefits of putting digital triggers on CPG apparel and all kinds of goods, actually.
Very good. Well, this has been great. We could talk for hours, but I want to quit whilst we're ahead because I just want to say this book is tremendous for anyone who is, even people that aren't technical, then you can play a bit and see some results and start to demystify some of the buzzwords that we use without really knowing what they mean, and you can figure out what they mean by using it and getting results. And then I applaud what you guys are doing with the platform, which is at one level kind of technical infrastructure, but I think you've done a great job of enabling some very practical use cases with some great brands. So thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
All right. So Dominic, what three songs would you take to Mars?
Okay, yeah, that's by far the trickiest question I ever got asked. I think I would pick The Beatles' Across the Universe.
All right.
For the Journey.
Yes, very good. That's the first time we've had that one, but very appropriate for a Martian trip.
And then I would pick one of my favorite bands. It's called Royksopp. And it's a Swedish electronic band, and I would pick The Girl and the Robot, which is about this, about the encounter of robots and humans and what that can bring and the good things and the bad things.
Are you optimistic about what's going to happen in terms of our future with robots, or do you think we're just an evolutionary stage and we're going to be passing the baton onto the robots?
I'm optimistic. I think it's going to be bumpy, and that's basically what the song, you know, tells. But there is a happy ending.
Okay, very good.
And then the last one, I would pick Kraftwerk, Radioactivity, because you just have to, right? If you're on Mars, you have to pick some kind of hardcore electronic songs.
Yeah, love Kraftwerk. So no Jean-Michel Jarre. I apologize if that seems a stereotypical...
No, actually I'm a big fan, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I could have picked Oxygen. One of those, but I had 2 minutes to choose it, so...
Well, I think you've done very well. thanks very much.
The Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, scaling IoT with battery-free Bluetooth.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.